Audrey Hepburn. For beautiful eyes, look for the good in others. For beautiful lips, speak only words of kindness. For poise, walk with the knowledge that you are never alone. So, Troy, thank you. We aren't alone. We do have people who can be in our corner. Thanks, everybody. Troy, God bless you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
Good morning, I'm Agatha Christie, and today our radio playwrights have written a delightful mystery drama about Hercule Poirot, the famous Belgian detective I created back in 1920, which means the centennial celebration will be next year in 2020. Excuse me, but I must have my morning tea before I can gather my thoughts into any semblance of order. Force of habit, you know. Now, let me tell you a bit about my writing style before we launch into this interesting story about a murder that took place on the mounds right here in Delavan, Wisconsin. Getting started on a new novel was always difficult for me. There is no agony like it. You sit in a room, biting pencils, looking at a typewriter, walking about, or casting yourself down on a sofa, feeling like you want to cry your head off. What I would then do is interrupt someone, like my husband Max. We would always have the same conversation. I'd say, "I simply can't do it anymore." And then Max would reply, "Oh, yes, you will." And then I'd respond with, "I can't think of an idea. I had an idea, but now it seems no good." And then Max would always say to that, "You've said all this before. You said it last year. You said it the year before." Well, perhaps I'd best refocus myself, since that's the theme music for one of my best-known characters, Hercule Poirot. I've thoroughly enjoyed our time together, and you can put money on this, that I will be sharing some other thoughts with you as we hear more about this intriguing story about the murder on the mounds. Now, where did I put my cup? It's time for some more tea.
And a very pleasant good morning. I'm Steve Brown, welcoming you into the 17-time award-winning WGTD Radio Theater in this, our 15th season, and show number 123. Today we're broadcasting live once again from Lake Lawn Resort in Delavan, Wisconsin. Our show today is Hercule Poirot in Murder on the Mounds, based on the character created by Dame Agatha Christie. Our stars are always from the 91.1 Players, and they star Todd Eaves as Detective Poirot, Susan Lean as Dame Agatha Christie. Today's original drama was written by Mike Ostrup and myself and is directed by Vicky Dumay. Support for the WGTD Radio Theater comes from the Kenosha Law Firm of Aaliyah Dumay and McTernan, on the web at addm.com, and from the Brown Oster Performing Arts Foundation, and finally from Lake Lawn Resort, located right here in Delavan, Wisconsin. And now join us for Murder on the Mounds, starring that famous Belgian detective, Hercule Poirot.
Oh, s'il vous plaît, allow me to introduce myself in a much more personal manner. I am Hercule Poirot. Here are some examples of how some people have described me. Short. I think not. Indeed not. Somewhat vain, with brilliantined hair and a waxed mustache. An aging bachelor who enjoys his creature comforts, like my blackcurrant cordials, and relying upon my little gray cells to solve crimes. And I am notably meticulous in my personal habits, in professional methodology.
Mr. Poirot, you are definitely quite meticulous, and if I might add, quite fastidious.
These most decisive words come from Miss Felicity Lemon, my most trustworthy secretary.
Why, thank you, Mr. Poirot.
You are most welcome, Mademoiselle. And just to set the record straight, Miss Lemon is incredibly efficient. And everything she mentions as worth consideration usually is worth consideration. She is an expert on nearly everything and has created the most perfect filing system. She also worked for the government, statistician turned philanthropist Parker Pine.
Mr. Poirot, do you think Mr. Pine believes that he is actually the British government?
I do hope, Miss Lemon, that you are not turning Sherlockian on me.
Never, Mr. Poirot, never.
Anyway, I do think that Mr. Pine would find our latest murder mystery out there on the mounds, just adjacent to Delavan Lake, to be quite fascinating.
I cannot speak for Sir Parker, but I can certainly say that the recent murder of Gerald Waterford was quite mysterious. He was liked by everyone. Such a kind man.
Yes, I dare say that Mr. Pine would find that murder quite interesting, and he would not hesitate to send me a wire, literally crying out, "Dame Agatha, please, please, you must look into this murder, and do so with all due haste." For your information, Sir Parker Pine is a retired government employee turned philanthropist who considers himself to be a detective of the heart. The exact nature of his former job and his former position in the British government was never stated, but he claimed to have been involved in the gathering of statistics. This leads to the theory that his job was the same as Mycroft Holmes, a human supercomputer specializing in omniscience. So, Hercule, what do you think of Sir Parker's standing in British society?
Well, now that you have drawn the comparison to Sherlock Holmes and his older brother Mycroft, I can only say, one who is omniscient literally knows all. Wouldn't you agree, Miss Lamont?
Why, of course. But then the word omniscient, which has been part of the English language since at least the beginning of the 17th century, brings together two Latin roots, the prefix omni, meaning all, and the verb scire, meaning to know.
Yes, indeed it does. And that brings us face to face with the murder on these historically famous, or perhaps I should say, infamous mounds.
Mr. Poirot, I believe that must be Professor Hannah Louise Brown, great-great-granddaughter of the famous Wisconsin architect, Dr. Charles E. Brown.
Miss Lemon, are you clairvoyant or something like that? How do you know it's Professor Brown?
Actually, she sent me a text message about 90 seconds ago saying she was just parking her car out front.
Well, by all means, please show her in.
As we are waiting for the professor to enter this next scene, Dame Agatha here with you again. Forgot to mention something the last time we spoke. Please remember this as we proceed through this murder mystery. Everyone lies. Yes, they do. Even the detective or hero in the story. It is human nature that they lie. My characters tell fibs for various reasons. Plenty of people other than the murderer have guilty secrets of their own. Their dishonesty, theft, or unfaithfulness may have nothing to do with the murder investigated. Of course, killers are terrible liars. They may attempt to remove suspicion by trying to take away their own life, faking it by perhaps drugging or poisoning themselves. Very clever indeed. Now that Professor Brown has entered the room and is ready to talk about her late great-great-grandfather, Dr. Charles E. Brown, the famous Wisconsin archaeologist, I'll step aside. But trust me, I'm still quite actively engaged in this story, and you will hear from me again.
Professor Brown, welcome. Detective Poirot has been expecting you.
Professor, welcome.
Well, it's such a pleasure to finally meet you, Mr. Poirot.
That is very kind of you, Professor. Would you like something to drink? Some tea, perhaps?
Oh, that would be very nice.
If I may ask, what brings you to Delavan on this fine Saturday morning?
Well, it's somewhat complicated, which is why I wanted to talk only with you.
Go on. I'm all ears.
Well, it's about the apparent murder of Gerald Waterford.
Really? And if I may ask, why do you say apparent? Everyone who has mentioned his death has uttered the word murdered.
I know, and that's why I'm here today. Now, what exactly have you heard about his death?
Actually, very little, other than that it was near the lake, very near one of the piers owned by Lake Lawn Resort.
Well, that's just it. I've been doing my own sleuthing and have discovered that the body was found right where the only mound still remains. In fact, it's exactly where the elders from the Ho-Chunk and Potawatomi tribes attended an event back in 2008 when they conducted a drum ceremony to honor their ancestors.
Oui, someone did mention that to me. In fact, Just the other day, I was talking about the mounds with Olivia Hampton and Roberta Lancaster.
Really? Now, I have heard their names before. Well, what did they have to say?
They were telling me.
Oh, Roberta, do you really believe everything people have been saying?
Olivia, I never believe everything people say, but that doesn't mean I won't listen to them. Isn't that right, Mr. Poirot?
Yes, this is quite true. But do you think the mounds themselves played any part in the death of Gerald Waterford?
But Mr. Poirot, what about the shapes of those mounds?
What do you mean by the shapes?
Well, I've read that the shapes of the mounds at Lake Lawn Resort are usually circular or oval, suggesting an earlier period in mound-building history. And I'm just wondering if that might have played a part in Gerald's death.
Why would you think that?
Maybe because I told her.
And who are you?
The name's Devin Jaworski. I'm a lecturer in biology over at Beloit College, and Olivia and I were talking about how a number of Native American tribes lived in this area.
Mr. Jaworski, and just how do you fit into all of this?
Mr. Perot, please, call me Devin.
No, I prefer to keep our conversation quite formal. So, Mr. Jaworski is apropos.
Very well. As I was about to say, I have been studying the history of the mounds here in southeastern Wisconsin.
And based on your research, what have you uncovered?
Well, past research indicated that the mounds represented an ancient belief system in which earth, air, and water spirits lived in balance with each other. The air effigies, often shaped like birds, signaled a strong but kind force of the upper world. The water effigies, resembling turtles and lizards, stood for the menacing force of the lower world.
And the earth? What about the earth?
The earth effigies, shaped like bears and men, represented everything in between. Evidence suggests that the mound builders of this period, roughly 700 to 1100 A.D., nation.
Oh, yes, the Ho-Chunk Nation. Historically, if I recall correctly, they were divided into air, earth, and water groups. So it makes sense that the mounds would reflect this division.
Oh, dear.
What is it, Miss Langhatter?
I just received a very disturbing text message from a dear friend.
I do hope everything is okay.
I'm afraid there's been an accident.
What is it, Roberta?
Oh, Olivia, my dear friend Jessica Queensberry has taken ill and is in the hospital.
Did she send you that text?
Well, of course not, Mr. Perot. It was sent by her administrative assistant, Andrew Crenshaw.
Really? Mr. Crenshaw?
Why, yes. Do you know him?
Actually, Miss Lemon mentioned his name to me recently. But anyway, I do hope your dear friend is feeling better. Mr. Jaworski, you do seem restless. Are you okay?
I'm fine. I was just looking at the newspaper here.
No, of course you were. Before I leave, I do have one more question, Miss Lancaster.
Yes?
What do you know about Mr. Crenshaw?
What do you mean?
I mean, what kind of person is he?
Well, I've only met him once or twice, so
Mr. Poirot, I have chatted with Mr. Crenshaw a number of times. In fact, he and I have, we've gone to dinner before. With Jessica Queensberry, of course.
Oh, why, of course. And what is he like?
Well, Jessica has told me that the only mistakes he makes are typing errors sometimes and has trouble sometimes paying some bills online. She also mentioned that he was quite worried about some strange events surrounding his younger sister at the time.
Really? I see.
Oh, but that's about it. He's worked for Jessica for over 4 years now, ever since he graduated from the university.
This is all quite interesting. I do appreciate you telling me that information.
Why, of course, Mr. Poirot.
Agatha Christie here once again as Monsieur Poirot returns to present day and the terrible murder of Gerald Waterford upon the mounds of Lake Delavan. Monsieur Poirot always says that the greatest tool for crime-solving is the mind, thanks to the little gray cells. He prefers to sit quietly and think when he solves crimes, for he believes all crimes are psychological, and having clues is not everything. Although his belief is that crime is not solved on evidence alone, he's not above snooping into others' personal things. Our Belgian detective has been known to listen at doors, hide behind curtains, and even dig through dresser drawers, looking for clues.
Ah, it is good to be back here at Lake Long Resort. I'd like to stop by the Frontier Room for lunch and a glass of wine. But I do think I should try to just a bit harder to find out more about the illness of Jessica Queensberry.
Mr. Poirot, where have you been? I have several messages for you.
Miss Lemon, I was actually over near Beloit, looking for important clues to the death of Mr. Waterford.
I see. Did you leave Beloit with anything important?
Perhaps a slight headache, a bit thirsty, and maybe a few important clues.
Would you care to share anything with me?
Why, of course.
Well, I was hoping you would.
I found some evidence that the late Gerald Waterford apparently tried to contact Professor Hannah Brown to say that someone very dear had walked out on him unexpectedly.
Really? Oh, dear. So do you think Professor Brown might have played a part in the death of Waterford?
This I do not know. But as you know, I prefer things to be in order, no confusion.
Yes, of course you do.
Things must always be left in an orderly manner, like books arranged on a shelf according to height. And I must have symmetry everywhere. No exceptions.
Well,
I despise dust and unclean homes and favor the indoors, especially central heating. It's winter.
Well, what about when you have to rummage around a murder scene? Messy and bloody and all.
That must be done. It is part of the job, you know.
And then there are the mounds, correct?
Exactement. The mounds.
I think Professor Hannah Brown is here again to talk about the mounds and maybe even the murder of Mr. Waterford.
Did she text you to let you know?
No, I saw her car pull up outside.
Ah, how very sleuth-like on your part. Professor Brown, once again, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Poirot. Miss Lemon, how are you today?
Oh, I'm fine. Thank you for asking.
What brings you out on this lovely Saturday morning?
The death of Gerald Waterford.
What about his murder?
Actually, I said death.
If I'm not mistaken, Professor, a short while ago you used the phrase apparent murder regarding Mr. Waterford.
Oh, you are correct, Miss Lemon.
So, if I may ask, why the change?
Well, you may think what I'm about to say to be quite strange, but someone in Madison said they thought they saw Mr. Waterford a few days ago.
That's impossible.
Indeed. His body was found over a week ago, buried in the ground where skeletons were once found of humans believed to be 10 or 12 feet tall.
Hello? Hello? Miss Lemon here. Yes, I see. Very well. I shall tell Detective Poirot. Goodbye.
Who was that, Miss Lemon?
David Barth from the county sheriff's office.
And what did he have to say?
I must tell you privately.
Okay, if you must.
Mr. Poirot, the sheriff said that he has absolute confirmation that Gerald Waterford is alive.
Where was he supposedly seen?
No fewer than four people saw him at a restaurant, a bar, and a shopping mall. And get this, he was seen in Madison, in Milwaukee, and in Kenosha.
Making the rounds, as some people like to say.
Well, that's for sure.
I think it is best to not say anything at this time to Professor Brown.
Yes, I agree.
Professor, I do believe that Miss Lemon and I must depart, as we have to take care of several matters right now.
Oh, very well, I understand. But there is one last thing that I must tell you.
Yes?
Well, you may wish to speak to Olivia Hampton and Roberta Lancaster about Mr. Waterford.
Why is that?
Because they both have something quite valuable of his.
Thank you for the information. Good day, Professor.
And good day to you, Mr. Poirot.
Dame Agatha here once again. And yes, I know it sounds quite stuffy to refer to myself as Dame, but I thought I'd say it just one time. You may be interested to hear that I just completed an interview with a radio news network, and they wanted to know how I develop my stories. So I thought I'd share a bit of that with you right now, especially as Monsieur Poirot is sifting through lots of material about Mr. Waterford. Regarding how I develop ideas for my novels and short stories, plots come to me at such odd moments. I could be anywhere and receive inspiration for a story. I keep a small book with me all the time to write ideas down at any moment. Things are organized with labels and the ideas are filed according to subject. One last thing I'd like to share with you
characters from my stories came in the same manner as the plots. I might spot somebody near me, say at a restaurant. That would be a starting point of creating the character, for then you can make up something for yourself about them. I truly love that whole process of creating. Well, it's time to return to this intriguing story. I'm certain we shall be together once again before this morning's story meets its conclusion.
Mr. Poirot, I just received a text message from the sheriff's office.
Is there cause for us to react that shall require movement on our part?
Do you mean, do we have to go somewhere?
Precisément.
Yes. It seems we have to go and talk with Olivia Hampton and Roberta Lancaster again.
I see. Well, let us proceed with that, if we must.
Please, come in, both of you.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks.
Mr. Poirot, Miss Lemon, Olivia and I will be pleased to see you again.
Excellent. I understand that the sheriff suggested that we both stop in to talk with you.
That's correct, Mr. Poirot.
Miss Hampton, we were informed that you have some new information. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
We are talking about Mr. Waterford, we?
Yes, that's correct.
First of all, what kind of man is he?
He was an eccentric sort of man. No publicity, no mystery, no fanfare. Just a simple man.
But quite wealthy?
Oh, yes. He was very successful. His family owns 10 or so radio and television stations across the country.
Did he have any brothers or sisters?
Well, I'm not completely sure. I do believe he had one sister and, I think he had an older brother. But don't quote me on that.
Bah, we would never think of such a thing. Miss Hampton, is there something the two of you would care to show us?
Actually, Mr. Poirot, there is.
What do you have there?
As you can see, it's an old photograph of a skeleton that was found in a mound here in Delavan, right on the grounds of Lake Lawn Resort.
I see. Quite interesting.
And, Mr. Poirot, as you can see, it says at the bottom, on the northeastern corner of that property, there once stood a group of 5 conical mounds. They were rather small, only 15 feet wide, but more importantly, tell us that this was once sacred ground. One of the mounds, excavated in 1928, had a single skeleton laid to rest in the fetal position. It was clearly a burial site, probably for an important tribal member.
And this is where Mr. Waterford's body was found?
Well, not exactly.
Oh, what do you mean by that?
Mr. Poirot, look who's here.
Mr. Jaworski, it is so good to see you again.
Thank you, Mr. Poirot.
Actually, Devon, I was expecting you here this morning.
Devon? Anyway, you were?
You were Mr. Poirot?
Miss Lemon, that seemed to me to be the most logical assumption at this point. So, Devon, explain to the most minute detail just why you had to be here this very moment.
Because you need to know the whole story about Gerald.
You mean Gerald Waterford?
Yes, of course.
Devon, would you like to sit down first?
I think I'd rather stand.
By all means, do stand.
Might I have a glass of cold water, though?
Why, of course. Allow me to get it for you.
Devon, I know this is quite difficult for you, but please believe me when I say that Mr. Poirot and I are here to help you.
I know you are. Really, I do. But I must admit to you that I am a bit scared of what I've gotten myself into.
Just take your time.
Yes, okay. Of course.
Okay.
Here I am, back, with a nice glass of cold water for you, Devon.
Thank you, Mr. Poirot. Now, where to begin?
The beginning is always a good place. Isn't that right, Miss Lemon?
Why, of course. The beginning.
It's so easy to get confused. It's almost like trying to put together a giant puzzle with 1,000 tiny pieces.
It probably seems that way to you. But think of it more like how a mystery writer might piece together a story. You know, like something you are reading for the very first time.
Yes. Now I understand. It's like guessing what really happened in that mystery. My sister Catherine is not really Catherine. She's Nancy, the sister of Catherine. And the storyteller digs up all the dirt that but doesn't tell anybody till the end.
Or the body isn't really the body.
Yes, you're correct. It's only in someone's mind. That is the true mystery.
What do you mean, Devon?
Miss Lemon, let Devon allow his mind to truly wander about. This is a good thing.
I think he needs a bit of help, though.
Like what, Miss Lemon?
Hold on. I was reading a wonderful story last week. Let me find that book. I know it's here somewhere. Ah, here it is.
What does it say? Tell us both.
Yes, please do.
It says, most of us aren't detectives. Of course, we can retrace our steps to misplaced phones or lost keys, but we don't attempt to solve any difficult crimes on a daily basis. By reading a mystery novel, however, we can vicariously be a detective. We follow the crime solver as she or he probes a crime, questions suspects, and gathers evidence.
This is getting quite juicy. I love it.
As do I, Miss Lemon. Does it say anything else? Like, does it say anything about actually finding a body, but it's not the real body?
No, it does not say that. But it does say we might try also to piece the puzzle together by employing the methods of the detective. Whether we solve the crime on our own or not, we enjoy watching events unfold and the criminal revealed and hopefully caught.
Yes, and hopefully caught.
Oui, caught. Truly caught. The real person.
What are you trying to say, Mr. Poirot?
I am merely taking what you have been saying up to the next level, that's all.
I still do not understand. What I mean to say is...
Hello? Yes, I understand. I will tell him immediately. Bye. They hung up on me. How rude.
Who was it?
The county sheriff's office.
And?
They need you to go to their Kenosha County district office in Bristol at the intersection of 50 and 45.
When?
Now.
Okay, I'm going right now. Devon, you and I will continue our conversation later.
As Detective Poirot is being briefed at the county sheriff's office, and since we have about 75 seconds of time, probably less right now, today's playwrights want to share some very interesting pieces of trivia about Dame Agatha Christie. The Guinness Book of World Records lists Christie as the best-selling novelist of all time. Her novels have sold roughly 2 billion copies. Her stage play, The Mousetrap, holds the world's record for the longest initial run. It opened at the Ambassador's Theatre on the West End in November of 1952 in London, and as of today, November 2nd of 2019, is still running, now actually at the St. Martin's Theatre, which is right next door, and is running after more than 27,000 performances. Well, I'm getting my cue from our director that it's time to get back to our story, Murder on the Mounds, on the WGTD Radio Theatre.
Oh, that is such a fascinating story, Roberta.
It truly is.
Well, here we are, finally, at Lake Lawn Resort.
Well, you're making it sound like we walked all the way here, Roberta. Come on now. We drove your car and only walked here from the parking lot.
Well, that's true. At least I was able to park near the water tower, and I'm not Roberta, I'm Olivia, remember?
Oh, yes. I'm glad you did. That way you won't forget where we parked like I forgot who you were.
Well, never mind. Look, there's Miss Lemon over there. Let's stop and chat.
Hi, Miss Lemon. How are you?
Hello. Oh, Miss Lancaster, Miss Hampton. How are you two doing on this lovely November Saturday morning?
Oh, we're doing quite well. And you?
I'm fine. I'm just sitting here with Devon Jaworski.
Good morning, ladies. How are you today?
Hello to you, Devon.
Devon, good morning.
We were just talking about what Delavan was like eons ago.
What an unusual conversation for a Saturday morning.
Devon was saying that Delavan sits in the middle of what was at one time an inland sea. And during the Ice Age, many glaciers, the last of which was known as the Michigan Tongue, covered this entire area.
Really? Oh, I do remember some of that from a geology class.
It is quite interesting. Since so many people have been chattering away about the mounds, I just thought it would be worth pointing out that the Michigan Tongue dropped down to what is now Lake Michigan, and then a large section of this glacier broke off, pushing southwest into what is now Warworth County.
Hmm. Where is Mr. Poirot this morning?
Oh, he's on his way back here from a meeting at the Kenosha County Building in Bristol.
Oh, good. I wanted to ask him if there's anything new going on.
Actually, I do have something new to report.
Really? And what might that be?
I was talking to someone who received a very interesting text message, and then a voicemail message, and then an actual live telephone call.
Well, all of those are not that unusual. So what's the big deal?
Well, combine all those things with a live Facebook FaceTime visit, and then you have something quite bizarre.
Well, I guess I'm pretty slow on a Saturday morning. What is the big flea bag deal about all of that?
Gerald Waterford.
Did I hear someone say the name Gerald Waterford?
Yes, you did.
When does this whole thing occur?
Over the last 3 days.
What time of day or night was it?
Well, why would that matter?
Olivia, if Mr. Poirot is asking that question, I assure you it does matter.
I'm getting confused.
And why is that, madame?
Why would you be asking all these inane questions?
Hold on tight for this one.
Miss Lancaster... If you must know, reason and logic are my weapons of choice. I rely upon my insight into human nature, my powers of observation, and the deductive method in order to get to the truth of things.
No one was on the other end of that call.
Fascinating.
As you were saying, Mr. Poirot.
Please allow me to interject.
Oh, s'il vous plaît, by all means.
As you will notice, Mr. Poirot is always careful in advancing his points and never makes false assumptions. Mr. Poirot, after all, does unravel the complicated plot in the end. And then the crime is thereby solved.
Just like Sherlock Holmes?
Young man? No. Not like Mr. Holmes. Besides, he is a fictional character. I am a real person.
Of course you are. We all know that you are.
So finally... Tell us what was in this also-secret and mysterious series of messages that you mentioned minutes and minutes ago.
Here, I had to write it down on several pieces of scrap paper. One night last week, Thursday to be exact, I found that I couldn't sleep. You know how it is. Well, at 2 o'clock, I rose and switched on a light, intending to get a novel I'd been reading in the library. Let's see. Poirot, where is he now? Where could he be? What? Just what does this mean?
Ooh, that is quite strange. Almost evil.
And yet, I find it somewhat fascinating and even humorous.
Humorous? Why is that?
Let me tell you why, Miss Lemon. We started this journey, if I may call it that, talking about the mounds here in Delavan and also in Lake Geneva. Am I correct about that?
Yes, of course.
Mr. Poirot, if I may interrupt for a minute.
You already have, young man, so please continue.
Thank you. The mounds were mentioned in one of those messages recently received.
Really? In what way?
Yes, specifically the person said that as early as 10,000 B.C., hunter-gatherer societies roamed the land that now comprises the Geneva Lakes area. And he said that these people were not alone.
And how? Or should I say why? Is this so mysterious?
Because he said that you, Mr. Poirot, had uncovered some very dangerous evidence to the contrary. He emphasized, to the contrary.
I am somewhat perplexed now. Why, you may ask?
Mr. Poirot, allow me to answer that?
Professor Brown, I did not hear you enter.
Well, the door was open, so I just walked in.
Professor, I just got a text message from Wisconsin State Gazette that mentioned your name.
Really? My name?
This isn't very interesting, Professor.
Why do you say that, Mr. Poirot?
Because I also received a text message, which I seldom, if ever, receive.
What does it say, Mr. Poirot?
Hold on, let me find it. Ah, here it is. It says, I put on my shoes and started down the stairs. Imagine my surprise when, looking down the corridor, I saw a glimmer of light coming from the library door. Poirot? Where is he now? Where could he be? Just what is he doing here at this late hour? Those bloody mounds again.
What does that have to do with me?
I really don't know. I didn't say it did.
Oh, hold on. I just received a text message.
From whom?
This must be a joke.
Why do you say that?
Because it says it's from
Gerald Waterford.
Well, what does it say?
It says, the road of dreams leads up the hills so straight and white and bordered wide with almond trees on either side in rosy flush of spring's delight. Against the frown of branches brown, the blossoms laugh and gleam within my dream.
Oh, it's quite poetic. But it means so much more.
Yes, I agree. And it sounds so much like the late Gerald Waterford.
Well, I wouldn't know about that. But what I do know is this. Someone is sending us a message.
I agree. And my gray cells tell me this. The road the speaker walks on is straight, therefore easy to follow, pure white, and is bordered with almond trees. Since later they are described to be blossoming, we can assume that this particular dream vision takes place in the spring, because almond trees belong to the group of trees blossoming relatively early in the year.
Mr. Waterford, or someone, has also sent me a text.
What does it say?
Oh, I better hurry and read it.
Why is that?
Because my phone is running low on power.
Oh.
Anyway, the message says, the road of dreams leads up the hill and faintly gleams. Oh, dream most fond, what lies beyond, beyond the hill.
I shall tell you what lies below. It is a body. But the real question I must ask all of you is whether that body is Gerald Waterford.
Mr. Poirot, how could it be Mr. Waterford if he's the one sending me the text messages as well as leaving the voicemails?
This is quite a conundrum, isn't it?
Mr. Poirot, I dare say that not many of us have ever heard Mr. Waterford's voice.
This is quite true, Miss Lamont.
But I have.
You have?
Well, yes, I've heard it many times.
Well, how could that be?
Yes, do tell us, Dr. Brown.
Well, we used to attend the same church many years ago.
Is that so?
Well, yes, he sang in the chancel choir, as did I.
And I thought he was an atheist. Not that it really matters.
Well, it should never matter.
Mr. Poirot, as you have said to me many times in the past, we do need to move this story along.
Miss Lemon, as usual, you are correct. But this conversation is quite helpful.
Why is that, Mr. Poirot?
Because, Dr. Brown, it is often when you're talking over things that you seem to see your way clear. Your mind gets made up for you sometimes without you knowing how it's happened. Talking leads to a lot of things, one way or another.
As in, who might have murdered Mr. Waterford?
Exactement. And further, it is vitally critical that we absolutely determine that it is Mr. Waterford who is dead, or should I say, Mr. Gerald Waterford?
Mr. Poirot, I am totally confused now.
Good. Because if you are Miss Lancaster, then I imagine many of you here today are as well.
Mr. Poirot, I do believe I'm beginning to understand what you have been saying.
Something tells me, Devon, that you may be the only one here who might be on the same chapter and verse as I.
I'm not totally sure about that, but I will tell you this.
And what is that?
When I started to hear more about the Delavan Mounds, along with the announced death of Mr. Waterford.
Professor Gerald Waterford, you mean?
Exactly. Then I started to become suspicious of just who was actually dead.
Really? Why?
Because I vaguely remember that my mother, who passed away 4 years ago, once mentioned a Mr. Waterford. But his name wasn't Gerald. Rather, it was Harold.
Oh.
Everyone, please sit down and listen to this analysis of the murder on the mounds of Delavan Lake.
Mr. Poirot, I have never doubted you before, and I'm not going to start now, but I do find this possibility you are putting forth to be quite extreme.
Miss Lamont, having some doubt is never a bad attribute.
But yet, Mr. Poirot, you have always trained me to never question the scientific method of forensic studies.
What exactly is that, Mr. Poirot?
Quite simply put, Devon, it is the application of scientific methodology into the legal field. And it involves the careful examination of a scene of a crime and then extracting all the relevant evidences that could be used to either implicate or exonerate a particular suspect from a case.
I'm not so sure that is simply put, Mr. Poirot.
Needless to say, the person murdered on the mounds of Delavan Lake was not that of Gerald Waterford, but rather it was his brother, Harold Waterford, who is dead.
So, Mr. Perot, let me see if I understand this latest bombshell piece of information.
Please, proceed, Professor.
Gerald Waterford is not dead, but Harold Waterford is. And a number of people have been receiving text messages, voicemails, and emails from Gerald, which totally freaked people out since everyone thought he was dead. So far, am I correct?
Oui, you are spot on. Is there anything else?
Yes. Might I then surmise that Gerald is not only still alive, but strongly suggests that he, Gerald, is the murderer?
Let me announce this at this very moment in time. Gerald Jacob Waterford is being placed under arrest for the murder of his brother Harold. And after he was murdered, the body was neatly and carefully placed in one of these famous mounds on the grounds of Lake Lawn Resort.
Felicity Lemon here. As this story is coming to an end, with the twin brother being charged with killing his own twin, Mr. Poirot is getting ready to make some comments about Dame Agatha Christie. So I will say this. Thank you so much for staying with us during this fascinating story.
Merci, Mademoiselle Lamont. Before we conclude today's program, it is my pleasure to once again introduce Dame Agatha Christie.
Thank you, Monsieur Poirot. I have a few moments to read a quite scary Halloween-esque poem by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. It is called Haunted Houses. All houses wherein men have lived and died are haunted houses. Through the open doors, the harmless phantoms on their errands glide with feet that make no sound upon the floors. We meet them at the doorway, on the stair, along the passages they come and go, impalpable impressions on the air, a sense of something moving to and fro. There are more guests at table than the hosts invited. The illuminated hall is thronged with quiet, inoffensive ghosts, as silent as the pictures on the wall. The stranger at my fireside cannot see the forms I see, nor hear the sounds I hear. He but perceives what is, while unto me all that has been is visible and clear. We have no title deeds to house or lands. Owners and occupants of earlier dates, from graves forgotten, stretch their dusty hands and hold in mortmain still their old estates. The spirit world around this world of sense floats like an atmosphere, and everywhere wafts through these earthly mists and vapors dense a vital breath of more ethereal air. Our little lives are kept in equipoise by opposite attractions and desires, the struggle of the instinct that enjoys and the more noble instinct that aspires. These perturbations, this perpetual jar of earthly wants and aspirations high, come from an influence of an unseen star, an undiscovered planet in our sky. And as the moon from some dark gate of cloud throws o'er the sea a floating bridge of light, across whose trembling planks our fancies crowd into the realm of mystery and night, so from the world of spirits there descends a bridge of light connecting it with this, or whose unsteady floor that sways and bends, wander our thoughts above the dark abyss. That was Haunted Houses by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. My name is Dame Agatha Mary Clarissa Christie. Thank you so much for listening to Hercule Poirot in Murder on the Mounds.
And this has been the WGTD Radio Theater's live broadcast from Lake Lawn Resort in Delavan, Wisconsin. This morning we have presented an original story, Hercule Poirot in Murder on the Mounds, written by Michael Ostrup and myself, Steve Brown, and based on characters created by Dame Agatha Christie. Our director today was Vicky Dumais. Our stars from the 91.1 Players were Todd Eaves as Hercule Poirot, Susan Lean as Dame Agatha Christie, Jill Jensen as Felicity Lemon, Renee Bouchel as Olivia Hampton, Siegfried Christoph as Devin Jaworski, Vicky Dumay as Dr. Hannah Brown, and Kathy Zolke as Roberta Lancaster. Live sound effects were created by Michael Oster.